This is the KOTO Community Radio News for Monday, March 4th. I'm Julia Caulfield.
And I'm Gavin McGough.
In today's headlines, Telluride stands with Palestine.
Results are in from the dumpster.
Lawmakers take up dying with dignity.
And a mountain weather forecast.
It's a blustery Saturday morning with wind whipping down the Box Canyon. Roughly 30 Telluridians, young and older, stand outside the courthouse, chanting, sharing stories, showing support for the people of Palestine.
We have to connect to our humanity because this is a human rights issue.
That's Tabassum Siddiqui, one of the organizers of the march.
They're being starved. They're being terrorized. Their very existence. This is the act and function of Zionism. This is the act and function of white settler colonialism. This is white supremacy. This is racial capitalism. This is what it is. This has and if you think this has something to do with Judaism, it absolutely doesn't.
Telluride joined in on an international day of solidarity with people protesting across the world to support Palestinians and those in Gaza. Lauren Norton, another one of the organizers, says it's important for Telluride to look beyond its mountains.
You know, we sometimes feel like we're separated a little bit from the rest of the world in our Box Canyon. We can get kind of closed in and look inward a lot, which is great. But there's moments when we need to stand up and say, like, we're part of this bigger system, the world in general. We're all connected, and we need to be a part of this just as much as anyone else.
While the march focuses on the bombardment in Palestine, Siddiqui and many members who gather draw connection to other parts of the world.
Haiti is under occupation from this type of system, right? Every possible country you can think of in the Congo, in Sudan, are going through this right now, in Yemen, in Iraq, everywhere.
My grandfather, mi abuelo, escapó Germany, Alemania, and the genocide there. My grandmother left a dictatorship in Chile, backed by the United States and U.S. imperialism. So change can happen. People fight for it all the time, and it is the most disenfranchised people who fight for it always, and the most privileged people who ignore it always. This is in our bones, it's in our blood. And if you don't feel that, you have lost your soul. Indigenous folks talk about soul loss. You have lost your soul. Necesitamos cambiar el mundo. Es posible, yo sé. Porque vive en mi sangre la guerra.
Across the march, protesters highlight the importance of connection and shared humanity with those in Gaza. Here's Ian McMullen.
There's times that I feel like I'm removed from a lot of what's going on, even though we're seeing on the internet all the time. So even just small acts of protest and making our voices heard and being anybody, just standing up for people that are across the world that we don't even know or haven't even interacted with, just feels like a deeper human connection.
Dominique Bruno.
Estoy acá hoy día porque esto creo que es un acto muy importante de decir acá estamos para hacer notar que esto nos importa mucho, que los sistemas de opresión que ahora están destruyendo al pueblo palestino y a Gaza en especial, son los mismos sistemas de opresión que han actuado en Latinoamérica, en Centroamérica, en Sudamérica, y nosotros lo vemos y lo sentimos. Y creo que es muy importante demostrar el apoyo cuando podemos, porque son hermanos también.
It's a small march, but that doesn't dishearten those gathered. For Siddiqui, it's a starting point.
We are here because we want to build a different world for ourselves. We don't want a world of suffering. We don't want a world of oppression. That's not the world I want to live in. That's not the world I want for our young people.
Protesters march down Main Street with signs saying things like, "Fund communities, not genocide," and "I stand with Palestine." Organizers don't have another event planned yet, but they say more are to come.
During the high tourist season, our area's population expands as many as 5 times over. The bar is crowded, the streets bustling, the short-term rentals booked, and the dumpsters swollen.
We know that resort communities, this is a big challenge. Places that have a lot of tourism as a part of their economy, places that have a lot of like condo rentals, Airbnbs, during peak seasons, there are these pulses of materials that are generated that can put a lot of strain on the waste management infrastructure that can, really create real challenges for everybody involved.
That's Mike Nye, who works with the Environmental Protection Agency and formerly ran the EPA's Net Zero Research Program. When it comes to places like Telluride and similar ski towns across the West, adds Virginia Till, who works in sustainable materials management with the EPA.
You can think of these mountain areas as islands in a way, because you have to truck everything in, truck everything out, and things are more expensive, etc.
The combined strain of wildly fluctuating populations and geographic isolation makes trash a tricky issue for Telluride and its peers. Almost a decade ago, Till and Nye teamed up to conduct the first ever study specifically examining the waste habits of vacationers and chose us as their ground zero. Then, between 2019 and last March, the EPA set up multiple trash sorting events at the Franz Klammer Lodge and the Manitou Lodge to hand sort debris collected from condo units vacated by vacationers. The point was to see how much trash vacationers produced, adds Nye.
But also, I was super curious to see, how different it looked from the average American's, household waste stream.
The results bore some interesting data. Nearly half of vacationer trash was food, which could have been composted. And vacationers recycled less than the average Telluride resident, according to baseline data. Altogether, as much as 75% of condo waste headed to the landfill could be recycled or composted. That is, of course, if Telluride offered composting at a large scale. Bruin Waste Management is currently working on a pilot program to ship Telluride's compost to a facility outside Montrose. Till says based on their findings, that's great news, but is also possible to envision some smaller scale composting facilities closer to the Box Canyon itself. This could add further benefit.
Having a compost program, maybe a variety of programs locally, is cheaper because you're not dealing with transportation costs. Also, it's more adaptable because it is local. In these areas, sometimes the soils are not the best. It's a great strategy to have composting to feed the soils and retain moisture, which is important to all of us also.
Such structural changes are one side of things. Another side is making sure vacationers, who are out of their habits and routine, understand how to dispose of their waste. Nye says one strategy they've tried is to brand good recycling habits as something us locals do, with flyers encouraging guests to live and recycle like locals.
The social norming aspect of this has huge potential, and that was kind of behind this idea of the Live Like a Local campaign that we ran with the Franz Klammer. That, like, hey, this is how we do things here. This is how folks live here. This is how waste and recycling behavior happens here. That's enormously powerful.
The EPA conducted the study in collaboration with EcoAction Partners. Their findings will ground a paper on the study, and once published, it'll be the first work documenting vacationer waste habits.
Colorado's General Assembly is about halfway through the 2024 legislative session. In this installment of Capital Conversation, KOTO State House reporter Lucas Brady Woods gives an update on bills moving through the Assembly. Hey, Lucas, thanks for taking a couple minutes to chat with me today.
Glad to be here, and welcome back, Julia.
Thank you. I know I'm excited to get to chat with you again this week. As the legislative session is like plugging through, a lot of things are happening. There are some bills that are moving through that have to do with doctor-assisted death. Can you share what these bills are talking about and what it would mean for Colorado?
So in Colorado, doctor-assisted death or physician-assisted death is already allowed. It's allowed between a terminally ill patient and their doctor. Doctors can prescribe medication to sort of speed up their dying process if they're terminally ill. Currently, there's a waiting period where a patient has to make a request and then wait 15 days and make another request for this medication. This bill would actually shorten that to 48 hours. And could be shortened even further for people that may not survive for that 48-hour period. It also would allow open it up to, I believe, nurse practitioners as well could prescribe this medication. Now, there was a provision in the bill that would have opened up Colorado's medical aid in dying law, which is what this is called, to people from other states. Currently, you have to be a Colorado resident, and it was going to change that, but the bill sponsors amended it to not include that provision. So even if this bill passes, it will still be restricted to Colorado residents.
Given the fact that this is already something that is legal in the state of Colorado, do you know what the impetus was to, you know, make these changes to shorten this time? Do you know what the reasoning behind wanting to kind of shorten these times was for lawmakers?
Well, I spoke to a number of individuals who testified in support of this bill, and you know, a lot of the talk was around, you know, personal experiences with loved ones going through this and the suffering that their loved ones have had to go through during that waiting period and how sometimes it needs to be shortened. So I think, you know, from my perspective, a lot of it came from personal anecdotes and conversations lawmakers had with people that have experienced this and hit those barriers.
Yeah. So those are bills that, you know, help people in Colorado die on their own terms the most. There's also been some bills that are helping people live their best lives in Colorado. And we discussed some of these bills last week when it comes to trans rights bills in Colorado. What's going on with those ones?
Well, two of them were passed in the House of Representatives on Friday. And those would be bills that would require schools, whether it's teachers, staff members, schools to refer to students by their chosen names as opposed to their legal or birth names. And this is to, you know, make sure that trans students or non-gender non-binary students are given the respect to refer to them by the name that matches their gender identity. You know, there was a lot of debate around this bill, around parental notification and parental rights. And a lot of opponents to the bill argued that, you know, it would prevent schools from notifying parents if their kids come out as transgender or want to be referred to as a different name. Now, it's very important to understand that this bill does not force any schools to keep it confidential or to notify parents. That is being left, even if this passes, up to the individual schools and their districts. Another bill that passed would allow people convicted of felonies to change their name to conform with their gender identity. There's already rules around people convicted of felonies and when they can change their name. This would add conforming to their gender identity as one of the reasons they can change their name. And so those were the two major bills that passed the House of Representatives. Now they have to go over to the Senate. And as many would imagine, there was quite a bit of heated debate around those on the floor, but they ultimately passed, and we'll move on to the Senate.
Well, Lucas, thank you so much for taking a couple minutes. It's great to hear your voice again, and we'll chat with you next week.
Great to be here, as always, and great to hear yours as well.
That was KOTO's Lucas Brady Woods reporting from Denver.
Tomorrow is the first Tuesday of the month, and with it comes another Bardic Trails Poetry Night. The March gathering of the Talking Gourds Poetry Club will feature poet Ken Haas. Haas published his first book of poetry, titled Borrowed Light, in 2020 to much acclaim. Haas has chosen the prompt Horizons for Tuesday's gathering, and attendees are invited to bring a short poem or reflection to share. The gathering takes place on Zoom this Tuesday, March 5th at 7 p.m. and is brought to you by the Telluride Institute, the Arts District, and the Wilkinson Library. To register, visit TellurideLibrary.org.
The Peter Inglis Avalanche Education Fund's Backcountry Chats are back, and they're going back into history. At 6 p.m. on Wednesday the 6th, some longtime backcountry skiers from the area will lead a talk exploring the roots of the sport in the San Juans and its evolution since starting up in the 1970s. The event is the first in a series of backcountry chats which will explore Telluride's off-piste past. All chats are free, open to everyone, and take place at the Wilkinson Public Library program room.
The U.S. Supreme Court, in a unanimous decision released Monday, has ruled Donald Trump must appear on Colorado's ballot. The decision reverses a prior finding by the Colorado State Supreme Court, which disqualified Trump on the ground that he violated the Insurrection Clause of the U.S. Constitution. That clause bars any official who has engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the United States from once again holding office. Trump's name does appear on the state's primary ballot, as the state of Colorado allowed his name to be printed earlier this year while the U.S. Supreme Court was deliberating. Following the court's decision, Trump is a viable option for voters in the Republican primary. And Election Day is tomorrow, March 5th, Super Tuesday. Ballots are due in drop boxes by 7 p.m. There's a box here in Telluride at the Miramonte Building and one in Norwood at the Glockson Building. The National Weather Service forecast for the Western San Juans calls for mostly cloudy skies tonight, with the possibility of snow showers. The low is around 20 degrees. Tuesday, expect mostly cloudy skies with a chance of snow showers during the day. The high is in the mid-30s with a low near 20 degrees. Wednesday, there's a 50% chance of snow showers with partly sunny skies and a high near 40 degrees. Wednesday night should be mostly cloudy with a low around 20. This has been the news for Monday, March 4th. Thanks for listening. If you have a story idea or a news tip, call the news team at 970-728-3206.